Question. What does U.S. President John Quincy Adams have in common with the following people? The 16th president of Harvard, the 11th minister of Old South Church in Boston, the inventor of the steam tugboat, and the composer of the hymn tune Coronation. Answer. They were all founding members in 1809, 200 years ago, of the Massachusetts Bible Society. Well, in celebration of its 200th anniversary, the Society is in process of filming a documentary about the Bible and its role in the church today. And one of the questions in which they are interested is the degree of biblical literacy among people like you. While biblical illiteracy is rampant today across this country, I told them that this congregation knows its Bible. And the Massachusetts Bible Society is, as it so happens, here today with video and camera, hi Bob Craig, to test my boast. I hope to prove that you do know your Bible with a little impromptu quiz. I don't want you to be nervous, but your reputation and mine are rather on the line. So your job is to shout out the answers loud and all together, and the louder the better if you know you're right. Here goes. What did Noah build? What did Moses say to Pharaoh? How many years were Moses and the Israelites in the wilderness? What did they eat in the wilderness? In the Garden of Eden, from what sort of tree did Eve and Adam eat? You were getting A's until that moment. Adam and Eve ate a fruit. It didn't say apple, and it was from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. In a dream, Jacob saw angels descending and ascending by what means? At the wedding in Cana of Galilee, what did Jesus turn into wine? If you have faith the size of a mustard seed, what can you move? Here's a hard one. What three qualities did Paul name as the most important? Excellent. Name the four gospel writers. Name the first five books of the Bible. Excellent. Name the last book of the Bible. Fill in the blank. In the beginning, God created. The Lord is my. I shall not. Your body is God's. Excellent. Complete these sentences. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Excellent. Lord, thou hast been our dwelling place for. I could hear the older people know that one, for all generations. I was glad when they said unto me, let us. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, his steadfast love. My God, why hast thou. And now for extra points, a final bonus question. From one of the more difficult books of the Bible, the book of Revelation, for 10 bonus points, complete this sentence. Behold, I have set before thee. Excellent. I think you got a 95 or a 98 on the test. The Massachusetts Bible Society's documentary is interested in biblical literacy and what the Bible means to us. And I trust that the documentary, Bob, will reflect that the members of the Old South Church in Boston know their Bible. They're also interested, however, in seeking answers from Christian leaders to this question. If there is one piece of biblical understanding that I would want others to know, there's one thing that I want you to know about the Bible, what would that be? Well, the one thing that I want you and the world to know about the Bible is this: genre. Genre. So much depends upon recognizing that in the opening chapters of Genesis, we are wading into the primordial mists of time, and that the stories there are essentially mythopoeic in sweep and content. So much depends on understanding that the book of Exodus is epic. The book of Jonah is slapstick. Hosea is domestic and familial. So much depends on recognizing that the Song of Solomon is erotica, Judeo-Christian erotica, in the service of celebrating that which is intimate, warm, physical, and unabashedly sensual. So much depends on understanding that Proverbs are proverbial, that the book of Job is dialogical. The book of Job is dialogical, a sweeping, probing, anguished, raw to the bone controversy and argument on the experience of human suffering. So much depends on understanding that the epistle to the Romans is a letter in the service of Christian apologetics. So much depends on recognizing that a biblical genealogy is a boast, a declaration of pedigree, and that biblical genealogies are to be admired for their chutzpah while admitting they would fail the test of modern genealogical methodology. So much depends on browsing the pages of the book of Acts as one browses the pages of an old family album. The sepia pictures are yellowed and grainy, and everything appears a bit distant and strange and quaint, yet familiar. Because in viewing those pages and reading those stories, we are looking at ourselves, at our ancestors, at our own kin. So much depends on understanding that a gospel is an original hybrid genre comprised of biography, legend, miracle story, prayer, song, parable, teaching, sermon, prophecy, travel journal, and lots of hyperbole, all in the service of persuasion, of bringing you to faith. So much depends on understanding that the book of Revelation is apocalyptic literature, its strange, dreamlike incoherence having erupted from a circumstance of extremis. Try it this way. Think of a journey through the Bible as akin to the experience of downhill skiing. From the top of the mountain to the bottom, the skier encounters abrupt and challenging changes of terrain. Moguls, deep snow, ice, trees, cliffs, drifts, rocks, steepness. All requiring adjustment and agility as the skier negotiates an ever-changing topography. Reading the Bible is like that. So much depends on my ability to adapt and adjust to sudden changes in genre terrain. From beatitude to wisdom, from parable to miracle, from confession to instruction, from narrative to doxology, from benediction to commission, from interpretation to lamentation, from righteous anger to tender ministration. Now, when people ask me if I ski, I acknowledge that I have slid down some mountains, conceding thereby the success of gravity while remaining vague as to my own form of descent. I have skied just enough, or have slid down mountains just enough, to have experienced its dangers and its indignities. And I'm here to say that bad or sloppy biblical exegesis is as dangerous as an out-of-control skier on a crowded mountain. Bad biblical exegesis has fueled the Crusades, supported slavery, was as kerosene to the witches in Salem, was employed to justify the Holocaust, does violence today across this nation and across this world to our gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender sisters and brothers, and remains today among the most pernicious excuses for the oppression of women around the world. This summer, in July, former President Jimmy Carter issued a quite remarkable statement about just this. Carter began by stating that he is and has been all of his life a practicing and devout Christian. He is a deacon and has been for many years a Sunday school teacher. And he then explained why, after 6 decades, more than 6 decades, he chose some while ago to sever his affiliation with the Southern Baptist Convention. He did so, he said, because the leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention, quoting Bible verses selectively, blame Eve for original sin, and that falls on for them from there that women must be subservient to men. And Carter goes on to say how this reading of the Holy Scriptures has had a profoundly detrimental effect on women around the world in terms of women's access to education, to employment, their own decision about who they will marry, whether they can get credit in a bank, and whether they have civil and human rights equal to that of men. Now, to return to my skiing metaphor, I believe that biblical fundamentalists operate in whiteout conditions, unable to discern variations in genre terrain. They are ill-equipped to distinguish myth from history, or literary device from fact. And the consequence of this is dangerous. It does violence to many people. Now, as you, I think, have guessed, I am a lousy skier, potentially even a dangerous one. But I still go up every now and again because the view is so spectacular. There's nothing else quite like it. And because of the quality of the air and the feel of skis on snow, and also because of this, because of the hope against hope, slim though it is for me, of a long, smooth, fast, exciting, and elegantly executed descent. In approaching the Bible and navigating its terrain, some of you undoubtedly feel inept and awkward, perhaps even a danger to others. But I encourage you, nonetheless, to give it a go. For what you will see and experience there, high up on Mount Sinai, high up on the Mount of Transfiguration, or at the moment those two Hebrew midwives defied old Pharaoh, or when Jesus touched the eyes of blind Bartimaeus, or when Jesus reached out and raised Lazarus from the dead, or the day he was walking And his disciples didn't know who he was. On the road to Emmaus, and he unfolded to them the meaning of the scriptures. I am here to say that what you will experience in the Bible, in glimpses of mystery and of majesty, in glimpses of tenderness and of goodness, is like nothing else on earth. The Bible's authors and those who people its pages reveal to us something that we otherwise might not know, what it is like to live in the presence of God, what it is like to be measured and to measure our lives by God's plumb line, which is to say, it is both dreadful and beautiful, terrifying and soothing, confounding and riveting. One of the best things you will ever do. And the people said,